Last week, I was at our Easter camp with our high schoolers. And yeah, it was really awesome. We got to hang out with some really cool people. We got to do some awesome activities. And we were challenged by, the speaker who brought a really awesome message. And we did life together with the young people. You know, we shared tears, we shared laughter, we shared food, and many precious moments together. And it was a beautiful, experience. What was actually really beautiful to me was actually watching our young people just create places of belonging for other young people who were on the edges from different churches. And there was actually a couple of times where I was asked whether if this young person from another church was actually part of us. And I had to respond, you know, I'm not too sure where they're from. And the people who asked would respond, oh, you know, they just fit so well in your group. And that says a lot about our group, eh? And I love that. And another beautiful thing was actually watching the way our young people just look out, care, and just stand by each other, you know, during mealtimes, worship, and just free time. You know, they would approach each other and go, hey, how you doing? And what was even cool was they approached me and go, hey, Wilson, how you feeling? And to be honest, I was a bit tired, and it was really cool that they asked me, and we could actually be honest, and they'll be like, yeah, I'm pretty tired too. So yeah, we actually have a really awesome, beautiful bunch of young people. And actually just watching them engage with people was actually like much better than watching the John Mayer concert that I went to last night. It was much better than that. Like, I was just full of wonder and awe going, man, like, our young people, man, they're really good at these things. They understand the kingdom. They understand that we're called to create places of belonging for others, especially people who find it hard to belong. So, yeah, man, it's an awesome journey. And this Easter camp's kind of like a mountaintop experience, you know, where, mountaintop experiences where we get to engage with God, others, and each other in really awesome ways. But after the mountaintop experiences, you know, we actually go back to valleys. We go back to our realities. And I believe that whenever we have mountaintop experiences, we actually leave the mountaintop as changed people. We leave the mountaintop as transformed people. And we enter back into our valleys as these changed people, as these changed, transformed disciples, I guess you can call it. And what I'm really excited about is watching our young people enter back into reality, enter back into the valleys as these changed people. And I'm excited to see, I guess, where tribal heads to, and also the individual journeys of our young people. And to be honest, I'm really blessed to be able to, journey with this, eh? So it's a blessing, and I love it. So I guess before we begin, let's just pray and let's get into it, eh, guys? Dear Lord, I thank you that you love us, Lord. Lord, I just pray that, you know, that you give us your eyes to see the world the way you do, Lord. Lord, allow our hearts to be in line with your heart, Lord. Lord, teach us to be your disciples, to love this world, and to live in your way. And everybody said, amen. Amen. Today, we're reading from Acts 16, verses 16 to 24. And it goes like this. Once, when we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a female slave who had a spirit by which she predicted the future. She earned a great deal of money for her owners by fortune-telling. She followed Paul and the rest of us, shouting, "These men are servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved." If you ask me, that's pretty good fortune-telling. She kept this up for many days. Finally, Paul became so annoyed that he turned around and said to the spirit, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her." At that moment, the spirit left her. When her owners realized that their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. They brought them to the magistrates, who were the judges of the time. And they said, "These men are Jews." Yes, they are. "And are throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice." The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. And after they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison. in the jail, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. When he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the socks. So, that's the story we'll be looking at today. When I first read the story, I guess the first thing that jumped out to me was, you know, what was Paul so annoyed about? I mean, did Paul get so annoyed because the girl was shouting, you know, these men are the servants of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved? Did Paul get so annoyed because this girl kept this up for so many days? And to be honest, you know, I can see this getting pretty annoying. And personally, I do get annoyed with people who ask me the same thing over and over and over again. Or was Paul annoyed at something else? You know, this girl was a slave and had a fortune-telling spirit within her. And her owners made a lot of money exploiting her. You know, exploitation is the action of treating someone unfairly, taking advantage of someone, abusing someone in order to benefit from them. And this girl, she was a slave, meaning that she was already someone's property, where her rights and humanity had been stripped away. This girl, you know, had a spirit that wasn't from God. So you could say this evil spirit was exploiting her. Her owners made a lot of money from exploiting her as a slave with a fortune-telling spirit within her. You know, her owners were getting wealthy by exploiting her. And this poor girl got nothing in return. You know, this is a story of exploitation. This is injustice. And I think this is what Paul was getting annoyed about. You know, just seeing this girl being exploited. So Paul was annoyed. And annoyed means, you know, slightly angry or a little angry. And right now, I just want to point out in this situation that this is a testament of how Paul has been transformed by Jesus. And we can see it through the way that he deals with anger. You know, we all know that Paul is a zealous man, you know, meaning that he's passionate, fiery, eager, and he's quite intense. You know, if we look at his early days, you know, before he followed Jesus. You know, Paul was a guy who was angry at the Christian faith. You know, back then he was known as Saul. You know, he would violently persecute Christians to destroy the movement. This is how he responded in his anger. You know, this is the man that Paul was. And here, back to this story, you know, we see that Paul, he's in control of his anger. And Jesus said, you know, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And from here, you know, we usually think of meekness as weakness. The meaning of meek is used about domesticating wild horses, where the horse's explosive power is controlled. And when Jesus talks about, you know, being meek, he's talking about people who had control of their strength, control of their anger, control of their power, but non-violent. You know, there's a great danger in getting angry. You know, when we get angry, there is a temptation to return evil for evil. There's a temptation to actually hit back. But there is a danger in hitting back. Because returning evil for evil, it doesn't love people. And also we read in Mark, you know, where Jesus went to the temple courts. And he sees the injustices. He sees the exploitation happening within his temple, you know, and he gets angry. Instead of reacting straight away and returning evil for evil, he proactively overcomes evil with good, you know. He leaves the temple, he goes to the fig tree and curses it. And then the next day, he returns. And on his return, you know, he doesn't go out to hurt people. But instead, he releases the way, way, way overpriced animals that the temple was selling for the sacrifices to God. And he flips the tables holding the money. You know, Jesus shows us to practice self-control, that we do not react with aggression or evil, but to respond with self-restraint love, regardless of the way people treat us or treat others. You know, being meek means to get angry over injustice, over exploitation, over abuse, but never aggressive. And as we go back to the story, we can see that Paul's life has been dramatically changed by Jesus. You know, here in the situation, you know, Paul's annoyed and angry with the exploitation of this girl, and this injustice. You know, he controls his anger and his annoyance. And he makes sure that he doesn't return evil for evil, but instead evil with love. And Paul, you know, later on, he's the guy who writes, "In your anger, do not sin." You know, this is the testament of change that Jesus has done in Paul's life. And on a side note, I think it's really awesome to look back on our journeys, you know, just like we look back at Paul's right now. When I was an early Christian in mixed course at intermission, I was actually quite a rash Christian. There'll be times where, like, if I saw a fight, I would quickly run over and try to stop the fight and get in between the guys and, like, try to stop the fight. But what would happen is that I would end up fighting one of the guys. So that was me. So instead of stopping the fight, I would actually be in the fight. But those were my early Christian days. But now, hopefully, I'm a lot wiser and smarter. Hopefully, guys. And the other day, actually, I saw a fight in Rewa. So what I did is that I sat in the van across the street. I started beeping the horn and yelling out, "Hey, do you need a hand? Do you need help? Do you want me to come out of the van or do you want me to stay back in here? Are you guys all right? You guys talking, eh?" And I just kept on yelling and yelling. And I go, do you want me to ring the ambulance just in case one of you guys get hurt? And I just kept on yelling and beeping. And within about 30 seconds, they just got sick of me and just walked off. You know, like, I'm starting to learn, you know. I'm starting to learn. So it's really awesome to actually look back on our journeys to see how much Jesus has changed us, to see maybe how much wiser he's made us. So I guess, you know, I would like to encourage you guys to actually look back on your journeys, you know. Look back on your stories sometime to see how far you've come, to see how Jesus has transformed your life. Look back on your stories. Look back on your journeys. Before we head back to Acts 16, you know, I really want to share a quote by Augustine of Hippo. That's a pretty cool name, Augustine of Hippo. You know, he says, "Hope has two beautiful daughters. Their names are anger and courage. Anger at the way things are, and courage to see that they do not remain the way they are." You know, here in the story that Paul is angry, you know, he's annoyed with the things at the way things are. He's angry at this exploitation of this young girl. And I want to say, you know, we need anger to bring hope. You know, we need to share the same heartbeat as Jesus. You know, loving the things he loves. You know, when Jesus first began his ministry, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And I guess the question is, do we share the same heartbeat as Jesus? You know, throughout the Gospels, you know, I see Jesus getting angry at the things that exploit his creation, that abuse the things that abuse his creation, and the injustices within his own creation. You know, Jesus got angry over the things that cause destruction, sin, and brokenness in our world, and to the people he loves. And this is what righteous anger looks like. And without this anger, you know, we do not learn to see what is wrong with our world. We do not see the brokenness within our world. And we do need anger to bring hope. We also see in the story that Paul took courage to see that this exploitation of this girl doesn't go on. You know, Paul, he's a Roman citizen. You know, he was a Pharisee. You know, this man was educated. You know, Paul knew a thing or two. And maybe days and moments before he commanded the Spirit to come out, you know, Paul probably knew what would have happened if he commanded the Spirit out. He knew the effects of his action if he intervened and stepped into the situation. You know, he probably knew that he would have got in trouble. He probably knew that he would have got in jail. Or even worse, he probably knew that he could have been crucified. And in the story, before Paul commands the Spirit to come out, you know, he knew what was going to happen to him afterwards. He knew what could have happened to him afterwards. And I can imagine that moments before Paul just being afraid, just being frightened, or even maybe a little bit scared. The word courage comes from the Latin word cor, and this means heart. So simply, courage means to take heart. And there's a quote from the Games of Thrones that goes like this: "Bran thought about it. Can a man still be brave if he's afraid? That is the only time a man can be brave, his father told him. And I think that's the same with courage. You know, we only can have courage when we're afraid, frightened, and scared. Because in those moments when we're afraid, frightened, and scared, those are the times that we really need to take heart. You know, personally, I swore to never be silent whenever and wherever human beings endure suffering and humiliation. I always must take a side because being neutral helps the oppressor, never the victim. And silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. So I am learning personally to actually take courage. I used to live on Christmas Road, and I would go for runs around the block. And this one time on one of my runs, I went out for a run, and I heard some violent screaming. So I decided to approach the house and actually just check it out. And the screams got louder, so I was like, man, I better do something. So I went over to the door, and I went to knock. And I was knocking, man, and my heart was just thumping. I was afraid, I was frightened, I was scared. In my mind, I was trying to envision different scenarios just to prep my body on how to react when the door swung open. And as I was knocking, the screams just got louder and louder. And as the door opened, a lady answered and said, hello, in a confused manner. And as I look over her shoulder, her kid was just throwing a big tantrum. You know, I was embarrassed. I was so embarrassed. I was like, just wanted to check if everything's okay. And she replied, and she goes, oh, my kid, you know, is just throwing a tantrum. But thanks for checking up. You know, when I was knocking on that door, I really did not know what was going to happen. I didn't know what the situation was. I didn't even know what could have happened to me. And it took me a lot of courage to actually knock on the door. And as a disciple, I'm learning to have courage. I am learning to have courage. Because we need to have courage to bring hope. We need to have courage in the moments of exploitation, injustice, abuse, and brokenness. We need to have courage in those moments to actually take heart and to step out and intervene. And without courage, you know, the cycle of exploitation, injustice, and abuse, it just keeps on going because nothing's being done. Nothing is being done. And without courage, there is no hope of the kingdom coming where people will actually be free from this exploitation, be free from this brokenness, be free from this injustice. You know, we need courage to bring hope. In the story, Paul, you know, he takes courage to command the spirit to come out of him, or to come out of the girl. And when the owners realized that their hope of making money, when the owners realized that they could not exploit money from this girl anymore, they arrested Paul and Silas. Eventually, they got beaten and thrown in jail. You know, this is the effect of Paul stepping into the situation and freeing the spirit from the girl. You know, they got beaten and thrown in jail. But the other effect of Paul stepping in, intervening, is that they gave this girl hope. Now, just imagine my hand as this girl's timeline of her life. And over here is where she was going to end up in 5, 10, 20, 40 years as a slave, being exploited. Now, watch as I shift 1 degree. As you guys can see right now, her life ends up somewhere different. You know, 1 degree, you know, it changes where she's going to end up in 5, 10, 20, 40 years from now. It's a lot different from here to here. It's very different. And that's what hope does. It gives people the opportunity to shift their life by 1 degree. It gives people the ability to write new chapters in their stories. Hope gives people the chance to change their circumstances and situations. You know, the other effect is that Paul gave this girl hope of a new life. And to be honest, you know, like, it doesn't say how this girl's life turns out. It doesn't tell us how her story turns out. But I do wonder how it turns out. You know, now she doesn't have this fortune-telling spirit within her, you know. Does her owners release her anymore because they can't get money from her? Do other Christians actually come and get alongside her, rescue her, love her? You know, does she end up becoming a follower of Jesus? Does she end up becoming a disciple? You know, this is the opportunity that hope can bring. It gives people the chance to write new chapters in their story. And when I go to heaven, I want to hear her story. I want to hear how it ended up, because I'm pretty excited. Man, I'm like, man, what happened? What did this hope do? And this is the beauty of hope. It's exciting. The other day, someone shared a poem that describes hope, or what hope looks like. And I think it's one of the most beautifulest poems, if that's a word, I've ever heard in my life. It's called The Dandelion. I am persuaded by the dandelion to take to the wings of the updrift, to parachute into enemy country, to fall to the ground, to be walked on, to lose beauty, to die, and so give birth to a whole new generation of flyers. This is what hope looks like. And sometimes, you know, hope, it requires us to have this courage to sacrifice. And I'm starting to think that our Anzac soldiers, they did not fight because they hated what was in front of them, but rather because they love what was behind them. They went out to fight and sacrifice themselves so that the elderly, the women, the children didn't have to fight. They went out to fight for a hope so that the people they love and the people to come could continue to live in a free, beautiful country called Aotearoa. You know, our Anzac soldiers found a lot of courage to make the sacrifice. And us today, right here, we're actually living proof of this hope. We're living proof of that hope that they fought for. And I think this is what it means to pick up your cross. You know, in the face of injustice, in the face of exploitation, in the face of brokenness and abuse, that when we pick up our cross, we're willing to suffer, to sacrifice, and maybe die so others can have a hope to live better lives, so that others can have a hope to shift their life by one degree, so others can have a hope to change their circumstances. And this is why Jesus came to earth. You know, he was angry at the sin destroying our world and in our lives. And Jesus took up the courage to take up the cross to be our sacrifice for our sins, so that we could have a hope of living a better life in a beautiful world where injustice is no more in this life or the next. And I am living proof of that hope, where my life was dramatically changed by Jesus. You know, Paul is living proof of that hope, where his life was radically changed. And you guys are the living proof of this as well, of this hope, where I'm sure your life has been profoundly changed by Jesus. You know, as followers of Jesus, we're called to carry this hope in our everyday lives, in everyday situations, in everyday moments. In the face and moments of injustice, exploitation, brokenness, and abuse, we're called to bring this hope to this world. Just like Paul did in the story, you know. We're called to bring hope. And I believe that to bring hope, it takes anger and courage. We have to be angry at the way things are. We have to be angry at the brokenness, the injustice, the exploitation in our world. So maybe you need to discover this anger, this righteous anger. And we got to have courage to see that they do not remain the way that they are. We got to have courage even if we're afraid, frightened, or scared. So maybe you need to discover this courage. Even if this hope requires sacrifice, you know, maybe you need to discover this courage. When we're angry and when we can take courage, we bring hope. We give others the opportunity to write new chapters. We give people opportunities to shift one degree. We give people the opportunity to change the direction of their life and their stories of where they're heading. And maybe we need to live out this hope, because when I look around our place, man, there's so much of this stuff. Not just in our neighborhoods, but in our world, in our workplaces. There's a lot of this happening. We need to bring this hope to this world. And I guess to finish off, I will read the Dandelion poem again. And we'll take a moment to reflect on this. And during this moment, I'll pray to finish off. So I'm going to read the poem, we'll reflect on it, and then we'll pray. The Dandelion. I am persuaded by the dandelion to take to the wings of the updrift, to parachute into enemy country, to fall to the ground, to be walked on, to lose beauty, to die, and so give birth to a whole new generation of flyers. So dear Lord, may we disciples share the same righteous anger you have towards brokenness, injustice, abuse, and exploitation in our world. Lord, may we disciples share the same courage as you have taken, as you took up the cross, Lord. May we disciples bring hope into our broken world, you know, a new way of living, you know, your kingdom, your way, where people are given opportunities to shift their lives 1 degree, opportunities to write new chapters. And everybody said,